Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Dave Martino is here with his baseball bats.
Yes. I'm not a baseball player, Al.
Oh, come on.
That's a different guy. It's a different
Don't
guy.
Don't you wrecking my fantasy here. I mean, you got to be. You got to be. That's why I said I wanted a celebrity.
Yeah.
Co-host. And they said, well, we've got this baseball player, this Martino guy, and he's good. He's real good.
He got in on false pretenses.
Now I'm depressed now. Can he even play baseball?
No.
Oh, boy.
Maybe. Maybe I could now.
Well, we can still get cheap hotels, you know, under that name. Yeah. So I think, you know, first class, they got to get the baseball player first class hotel, right?
We're going to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get this week going now. This week we are talking to a lot of authors, and it's mainly true crime. Today is sort of on the edge. It's crime fiction. But we're going to be talking about a book called 1033, Assist PC, a Mike O'Shea novel by Desmond P. Ryan. So thanks for being here, Des.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Des, where did it all start for you? What hospital was it you were born in? No, I mean, how did you get into to writing these undercover crime fiction sort of novels?
Well, I was a police officer in Toronto, up here in Canada, for almost 30 years. And when I retired, well, a little bit before I retired, I thought, I don't want to be that guy that sits in the corner of the pub and talks to everybody about all his police stories, so I should write some of these down. And so that's how the whole idea of writing the Mike O'Shea series started.
So you can sit in a bookstore and tell people all about these.
Yeah, and now I can sit here with you and tell these stories.
Yeah, yeah. That's fun. You got into policing, and you were policing in the big TO, Toronto. What do you think about being a policeman and that in these modern days? Would you want to be a cop today?
Well, it's funny because when I came on in 1987, the guys that had been on for 20, 30 years, they just kept saying the job's
fine. Oh, my.
And now, all these years later, I'm like, oh, man, it's a totally different job. It's very much a generational job. And so the way policing is done now is very different from the way it was done when I started. So I think I've kind of dinosaured myself out.
You find it people that know you're a cop or were a policeman, is there kind of a negativity in let's say in Canada toward police as there is in the U.S.? Like in America right now, there's a real, you know, a line drawn, you know, Blue Lives Matter and all this sort of stuff. And then there's a lot of tension. Do you feel that's the same way up in Canada or not?
I think it is to a degree. I mean, I can't speak for it today because I retired about 6 years ago, but the line was starting to get drawn in the sand then. Having said that, I remember when I started in the 80s and I told my left-wing beatnik friends that I was becoming a cop, I lost a lot of my left-wing beatnik friends. But I don't think it was quite as strong as it is today.
Yeah, because I think back then the beatniks were thinking it's uncool. You know, you're a pig, baby, and it's uncool, right?
Oh, yeah.
It was a different sort of sense. I think there's a real anger right now towards policing, especially with the U.S., because the U.S. the black relations are not the best with police, certainly in the media. So it's not quite the same. What do you think, being a cop all those years, you learned, or I guess, how do you think it's changed you as a person?
Well, I mean, there's kind of two sides to that coin. On the one hand, I had the best seats to the greatest show on earth. I mean, I got to see so many things, good and bad. And I got to see people mostly at their worst, but you get right into the thick of people's lives. And it's really, really interesting. The flip side of that is that it can kind of warp you a little bit. We talk a lot about, gallows humor. I mean, that's alive and well, because you can't possibly go through, the types of experiences that anybody in a frontline environment goes through. And I mean, you either lose your mind, become incredibly cynical, or hysterically funny through gallows humor.
Yeah, I've gone that way. But when you say that, you see people at their worst, so does that, over a period of years, make it so that even when you're off, you're not a cop, and you go out to a store, or you go to a whatever, you're just out in public, do you sort of spot and naturally look for things that people are doing that are wrong? You know, even if it's, you're not intentional, it's just part of your training, you just sort of spot things. All of a sudden someone's stealing something or doing something that's not, let's say, legal or correct. Does that sort of happen naturally after doing that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's something you can't really turn off, because you're trained to look for certain things. And if you do that enough, then that's all you see. And that's one of the challenges, I think, for police officers. I mean, I can speak to police officers, to that experience, is that, you know, being able to kind of step down and sort of remind yourself you're off duty. Somebody else is looking after this. It's not your responsibility. You know, so if something happens, like today, for example, I was driving home, I'm getting my hair cut, and a cement truck had rolled over on the other side of the road. People had stopped. It was being looked after, but my impulse was to pull over, get out, and make sure the driver was okay. Clearly he was okay. It had been dealt with. The police were on their way. It wasn't me. But I had to remind myself, it's not you. Just get on your way home.
Yeah, I guess it would be tough drawing that line between being like an officer and just being a good person. You know, kind of, there's that, you have to kind of understand where that line is and stuff like that. Unless, of course, you're Bruce Willis in a Die Hard movie.
Oh, yeah, totally. And then you're like totally good all the time. Well, you know, I was going to do that. I was going to hop out. I was going to flip the tow truck or the cement truck back up and then get back in my car. But I thought, no, I'll leave that for somebody else.
You didn't want to mess your new hairdo.
Well, that's it. You know, with the hair that I have, as all of your listeners can see, you know, it takes a while to look like this.
Yeah, well, there you go. You said it first. Well, speaking of Bruce Willis and that, do you think that police are portrayed very well in movies and TV and even books and stuff like that? Like, you've got a book out now, and we're talking about that. Do you think in general cops are portrayed well in media?
You know, it's difficult, because everybody has their own brand. So, I mean, a lot of police work is really boring. It's, you know, sitting, waiting for things to happen. It's documenting what has happened. It's waiting for your documentation to do something about what's happened. And that makes for a really boring Bruce Willis movie. If you're going to see an action movie, obviously the police are going to be portrayed in an action kind of way. In TV shows, same thing. And so it's hard to find that balance between sort of reality and excitement.
So now your new book, it's 1033, Assist PC. Now, that you call it a Mike O'Shea novel. So obviously this is like a series or a person you're going to make a series of and stuff like that. So who is Mike O'Shea?
The book is the first in a 6-book story arc. And so at the end of the 6 books, I'm either going to have to come up with something clever to do with Mike O'Shea, or that's the end of him. and his cast of merry people. But basically what happens is this book takes place in 2005, and it was intended just to be sort of a prequel to the second book that's coming out in April, which is Death Before Coffee. And so I just kind of wanted to give a little of backstory to what happens in Death Before Coffee. Got carried away, ended up writing this book. And so what happens here is that Mike and his team are working in the juvenile prostitution section of the police, and they are on the verge of cracking a juvenile prostitution ring, and they get burned, and sort of all sorts of excitement ensues, and the rest of the series deals with how these officers navigate through their lives, both personally and professionally, and hopefully at the end are able to resolve the issues that start in the first book.
Well, I have to ask, because you were a cop, how much of your own experiences as a cop would go into Mikoshe?
Well, for legal purposes, I have to say this is completely fiction, and I made it all up. But suffice it to say, again, for me, it was very cathartic. It was writing about experiences that I had been involved in or had information about. And it was writing about, for legal purposes, people that I've never met before. But the types of people that I worked with and the experiences and relationships I had with those experiences, or with those people, rather. So I like to think that it's fairly realistic with a little bit of a twist, so we can call it fiction and I don't get sued.
Well, you know, you're talking about boring police work, and I was just wondering, how do you strike the balance between the realities of police work and law enforcement and giving readers the excitement that they want? And that does, I assume, happen. Things go from kind of 0 to 60 at times in fields like that. So I'm just wondering how you strike that balance.
Well, again, you have to, at least what I'm trying to do in my books is that exactly that balance. So there's times where they're just kind of sitting around. And the great thing about writing is you can use that for character development, as opposed to you just have two guys sitting in a car watching an address saying nothing for 30 pages, because I, you know, 30 blank pages. I think my publisher would have some issues with that. So you get a little bit of banter back and forth. And in a novel, you're compressing, months or years of relationship into a very short span of time. So as a literary device, I can use that downtime to build their relationships.
What made you go into writing after being a cop, other than, of course, the idea of telling your stories and stuff like that, but to actually do it rather than to think about it? What was the initial, the push or the thing that happened that made you go, yeah, I'll do it? Because there's a big difference, like I said, and to actually write it and then send it to publishers and have them read it and get it out there for the public. What drew that? What got you going on that?
I think it was probably a combination of arrogance and stupidity. Which is to say, it was just, I'll just write this and I'll send it to a publisher and it'll be great. What I didn't realize was that, well, I kind of did, but I didn't listen to that voice in my head, was that the publishers aren't sitting there waiting to hear what Desmond P. Ryan has to say about anything, and nor were any agents. So it took several years. It's kind of like speed dating gone bad. Of sending out all kinds of requests and things to get agents to read my stuff before somebody finally said yes. And by that time, I just thought, I've started this series. I'm just going to keep writing it. And that way, when somebody does say yes, I'll be ready. And that's how that happened.
Well, I'm wondering how it was going from writing within law enforcement, police work, writing reports, the who, what, where, when, and how type of writing to transitioning to creative writing. How was that for you? Was that difficult, or did you find that was easy, or was it something that you had done before?
Well, Dave, what happens there is you get to make stuff up, which is great, and you get to have the ending that you want. And so in a lot of ways, it became cathartic for me until it got darker. But it was being able to tell a story and it working out the way I wanted. In real life, in police writing, you know, reports and synopsises for guilty pleas and things like that, it doesn't work out the way you want. And the happy ending isn't usually that happy. So being able to write creatively was a lot of fun for me.
So really, that could be your choice of writing a fictional story rather than nonfiction over your policing time or real life is because in a sense you can achieve justice or the justice appears to happen in fiction books, whereas a lot of times in nonfiction it doesn't.
Well, that's it. And the other thing I considered was if you're writing nonfiction, you're writing about real people and real events. And in a lot of ways, nonfiction is, I think, is re-victimizing people again. I mean, I can't imagine how horrible it would be, you know, sort of the first time around to lose a family member through violence and then just watch a recreation of that on Netflix. And I just didn't want to do
right.
that.
Well, true crime writers are the worst.
and they have to do a lot of research, so that's a lot of work. I just, the stuff I don't know, I can just make up.
So there's a whole lot less research because you have a lot already to draw from anyway. You kind of already know.
And that's the other thing is that, you know, for people who don't have a law enforcement or legal background, I mean, my hat is off to them for the amount of research they have to do for readers to follow along. And I mean, that's a lot of work. I don't think I would have written crime fiction if I didn't have a background in policing because I wouldn't have done that much work.
Where did you get the inspiration for Mike O'Shea? Do you like other detectives, you know, that have been fictionalized before?
Well, I just kind of took him as, I mean, I'd like to say he's a lot like me, but he's a lot more lackluster than I am and a little bit braver. But I just thought if I was going to write a series about a specific character, I should really like him well enough to want to spend, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 years telling his story, you know, at my keyboard. And then however many years afterwards, talking to people about the character. So I created the character, and sort of as the series goes on, there's more depth to him because the reader learns more about him as I'm writing more into him. So in the first book, he's a young guy and he's sort of full of piss and vinegar. The next book, he's in the latter stages of his policing career, much more kind of laid back. Just because he's been worn down by his experiences. And I wanted to have him as a worn down guy, but not a burnout.
But does he have as good a hair as you?
Yeah, I think he's probably got better hair. he might have better hair.
How much of yourself do you think goes into Mike?
Well, I think in all of the characters, a writer puts a bit of themselves if they're writing fiction. And so I would think that. And maybe I'm just a really lazy writer, and I'll own that if that's true. Actually, I'll own it because it is true. The characters that I spend the most time writing about, I just draw from my observations and things through my eyes, just because it's easier and I'm a lazy writer.
Okay. Can you hear Mike? Are you the type of writer who has an inner monologue? Can you hear the character, or is there some other way that you experience this character and write dialogue?
Yeah, it's kind of, I sometimes wonder if it's a bit unwell, but it's almost like sitting in a room where everybody's talking and I just try to type stuff down as quickly as possible and hope I get it all. And when I do the first draft, it's pretty much all dialogue. And then I go back and fill in sort of all the other stuff. But I hear dialogue first.
It's like transcribing.
Wow. So when you're writing a book about like this, the verge of cracking a prostitution ring, are you, you know, do these voices make you go out and hang out with the the on street workers, or what goes on here?
No, but I did that in my professional career in my younger days. So there's no need to do any sort of that sort of thing now. It was all professional, by the way.
Yeah, of course. Nothing but. Well, as long as those voices aren't telling you to do weird things. When you started writing and decided you were going to do this, is this been purely entertainment for you, or is there something more you want someone to get from your books? Do you want the readers to understand more about policing?
Well, what I look at is one of the things I really liked about policing was that sense of having your finger on the pulse and that sense of getting a whole different understanding of people, a more in-depth understanding, and the possibility to look at things within a social awareness context. And what I particularly like, and I've noticed it in other crime fiction books as well, is the opportunity to make social statements and commentary is there without whacking people over the head and saying, you know, I am now going to talk about, you know, hiring and equity. I'm now going to talk about the glass ceiling. I'm now going to talk about the old boys club. But you can put all of that stuff in without saying it in as many words. And so as the series progresses, I look at more social issues and like issues of discrimination, whether it's gender-based or sexual orientation-based, again, without saying, you know, this is a feminist novel.
Right. So it's kind of wove into the story and not so much like a direct analysis or something of society, you know. So when you know you're doing the series, or are you the person that has this all outlined and structured ahead of time before you get into the writing?
Yeah, I'm a plotter. I'm kind of a cheater plotter, because I'll come up with the book outline and just kind of do a little synopsis for each chapter. And then I think I'm really, really clever because I've got it all done. And then I look at it, well, I'll just fill in the blanks. But as I go, sometimes the characters kind of go off on some little tangent on their own way, and I have to pull them back. And so I have to look at a way of doing that without making it look like, you know, you just turned the page and the guy's, you know, suddenly doing something completely different. So I think I've got it all plotted. I think I know what's going to happen. But sometimes the characters shift things and change things a little bit and expand some areas that I didn't think I was going to get into. And some of the stuff I thought was really great just may not fall into place. So I kind of cheat.
They become kind of alive and take over.
Yeah. Well, in the Mike O'Shea novels, I threw in a character who's Mike O'Shea's mom, and her name's Mary Margaret O'Shea. And I threw her in just because the story was fairly intense. It was getting heavy. It was getting a little darker than I wanted it to go. So I threw her in just for a little bit of levity. And after, I think, about the second or third book, some of the people that were doing the reading of it said, she should have her own series. She's really, really great. And I found that she was way more fun to write. And I was writing more of her into the police procedural. So I ended up writing a whole light mystery / cozy series with Mary Margaret O'Shea. That's become a whole series unto itself. So now I have two series going, but she's the perfect example of a character who got out of hand.
Well, with all these series, how do you keep track of continuity over whether it's the six books of this other series, or do you have tools? Do you have a series Bible? How does that work?
No, I don't. And I don't have a Bible that, and I know I should. And sometimes I think, oh man, I wish I'd written that down. And then I'll decide to start writing down all of these things. And then it just annoys me because then I'll have to look them up. So I just kind of muddle through and hopefully it works. And I also have a few editors that I fall back on who will say, wait a minute, didn't this, you know, character do this back here, and how are they now able to do that? So good editors help.
So was Mary O'Shea, was she a prostitute?
No, Mary Margaret is Mike's mom. She's the Irish mother.
Well, I knew she was the mother, but I was just finding out.
No, she is the Irish mother who makes sure that everybody does what they're supposed to do and is a little bit overbearing. And so I had to write her out of the books because she was just getting too big for her britches.
Oh, so you put her down.
That's right. Put her down into another book. So she just makes cameos now.
Well, when you're, but that brings up, because you're, when you're writing an evil character or a bad character, or if you have someone in there that's doing something wrong, you know, the murderer or whatever the case is, how do you put together that character? Like, where does it come from?
Well, a lot of those characters are compilations of people that I have dealt with in my professional career. And the challenge with that is that as I'm putting them together, as I'm going through the scenes, as I'm writing them out, is I don't want to go into that dark place. You know, it's like I've already dealt with that professionally. I don't want to go back there. So I find that I have to have some sort of real mental health tricks up my sleeve after writing a really heavy scene to be able to kind of get up, do something else, and come back without getting, you know, really depressed and into despair.
So what's your favorite thing about writing?
I like that I can make stuff happen. I like that I can take these characters that are completely made up in my mind and put them down, and all of a sudden on some level they become real. And that's kind of a neat thing. It just kind of blows my mind, actually.
And what's the thing you dislike most about writing?
Actually writing. It's a, you know, if you could kind of just click your heels and come up with a book, it'd be great. It's the sitting down, but that's not quite true, because you know, when I sit down, and I can thank my police training for this. I used to do a lot of writing. I mean, every radio call you went to, you'd have to do a report. And, you know, there's no such thing as the report muse. It's like, write the report, get it done. When I was a detective, you know, I had to write longer reports and things for people to go to court. And if you had, you know, 10 people that had to get to court during your shift, you're typing the whole time. You just go, 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 go. And again, there's none of this, well, I just don't feel it today. And I just can't string my words together. It's like, doesn't matter, do it. And so I find when I'm actually sitting down, I can sit for 2 or 3 hours and, you know, hammer out a 1,000 words, 1,500 words, and that's great. But then just kind of think like, okay, well, I just have to sit down. But it's a discipline to say, okay, every day I'm going to sit down. And that's how you write a book.
So what makes a good book for you?
I really like the characters. Because when you think about it, I mean, there's only so much that can happen. And there's only, I mean, yes, there's all sorts of little twists, but it's buying into the characters that I really like, and having characters that are a little larger than life, but not over the top. So they're, you know, not sort of mundane, but they're not so out there that you would never, ever believe them. So I think of the River series, Ben Abramovich, his series, and the characters are really quite interesting and just at that edge of suspension of belief.
So what came first for you? Was it the characters, the story, or the setting?
I think it was the characters. Because, again, I look at, if you take a murder mystery, it's pretty straightforward. Somebody gets killed, somebody investigates it, somebody gets caught, the end. And now you have about 80,000 more words to fill in. And so I know there are some writers who are really, really good with descriptors, and you just get drawn into the environment. I'm not that writer. I think my strength is in dialogue and in characters. And so that's, I just kind of let the characters start talking, and then away we go. The story's on the move.
And so do you ever write in first person, or how do you write it? From what character point of view?
No, I've never done first person. I admire writers who can. I think to do it first person, you'd have to have a really interesting main character. And in doing that, you also have to be really careful not to kind of flip into some omnipresent thing. I like being able to flip points of views between sort of the characters a little bit, but mostly having that omnipotent narrator.
Say that 10 times fast.
I could even say it once. So the third party, I believe it's called.
Every time you finish a book, what do you think it does for you? How does it change you?
When I finish a book, I start the next one right away. And I think that's because I don't want to give myself time to ruminate. Because I think it'd be easy to finish the book, let it sit, and then sort of get thinking too much about it. I very much have taken my police training of like onto the next call into the way I write books.
Interesting. So who are your favorite writers, or do you have any?
Oh, my all-time favorite writer, of course, is Charles Dickens, because I love characters. I love how no matter how minor a character he writes, it's a complete little person. And his ability to discuss social issues and move things along, again, that seem very realistic but are a little bit on the verge of absurd. And he does that in all of his novels. I mean, they're super long novels, but nonetheless, it's worth the price of admission. So I got to say, he's my favorite.
Do you like reading outside of your own genre? Into different other categories?
Well, you know, Alan, I'm a really slow reader, like ridiculously slow reader. So I have friends who will read a book in an afternoon or, you know, on a weekend. It takes me a very long time to read. So if I'm going to read something, it has to be kind of worth my 2-3 week investment of time because I'm that slow. But for right now, I find I'm reading a lot of crime fiction novels, mostly just to see how writers do what they do and how I can do what I do better.
Right, right. Yeah, it's interesting field. You know, I always listen to them. You know, I listen to a lot of books.
Yeah, I tell people I'm reading a book, and then I always have to put in brackets, you know, who am I kidding? I'm listening to this book, and it's really good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the same. If you can't see or read as well, I like listening to books, especially nowadays because they're pretty good, most of them. You know, narrators and stuff are really good, so it turns out pretty good. Wow. So now, do you have a social media presence, and do you have a website and all that? How do you like to act or interact with people?
I do. I have a website, realdesmondryan.com, and I have a Twitter account, realdesmondryan. There's kind of a theme going on here. Let's see. I'm on Insta as Desmond P. Ryan. Thought I'd like break away from that theme.
Yeah.
And that's about it. I mean, pre-COVID, I was involved in doing a lot of library talks about crime fiction in general. And now that I've got the book out, I'm looking forward to getting back out, because I really like talking about my book. I really like talking to people about what books they read. And it's a lot of fun. Very different from talking to people in a policing context.
Of course, we'll have all of that up on our website so people can find you real easily. How was it writing over pandemic? I'd imagine you must have done some of that.
Yeah, actually, that was really, really challenging because, I mean, I'm sure a lot of your listeners had big challenges during the pandemic. So, I mean, everybody's challenge was bad, and, well, maybe some people's weren't. But anyway, I was going through a very dark, dark place, and I found when I was writing the Mike books, the Mike O'Shea books, they got really, really dark, and I didn't want to go there. So that's when I focused more on writing the Mary Margaret light mystery books, because she's fun and irrelevant, and you can make all sorts of stuff up because it's a light mystery and you can get away with that, whereas you can't do it in a police procedural. So I found I had to step away and do something completely different because it was just way too dark and I was in too dark a place at that time.
Yeah, yeah. I can. You didn't want your fiction book, crime fiction book, to be so dark, I guess. You know, that could be kind of a hard thing. It's better to make merry that way.
Well played, well played. And this is why you have your own show.
Well, I have my moments, let's just say. Well, that's interesting. Well, I really appreciate you being here, and it's been a real pleasure. Now, the book, of course, is called 1033, Assist PC, and it's a Mike O'Shea novel, and the author has been our guest, Mr. Desmond P. Ryan. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Des.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.